In the era of Facebook and Twitter, an insensitive comment or TMI, too much information, could have lasting consequences. Today on Central Standard, a look at a kind of intelligence that has nothing to do with your IQ, your emotional intelligence. I'm Bill Anderson, filling in for Jabalani LaFall. On today's Central Standard, we're joined by Dr. Bruce Lease for a conversation about being smart about our feelings and those of others, and what this means to our romantic relationships, our working relationships, how we raise our kids. We'll learn a bit about how to effectively use our emotional intelligence and to help teach it to kids, partners, and employees, plus some ideas for what you can do to hone your own skills. That's all ahead on Central Standard. But first, the news. Good morning and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Bill Anderson, substituting for Jabalani LaFall. Today, emotional intelligence. Do you know what it is? In a world with Twitter and where new platforms of communication emerge with regularity, in which Facebook and other social media extend our communication abilities to a global scale, are we adequately equipped to engage in healthy communication? New media aside, do we have the tools to have healthy relationships with workplace peers, our children, our partners, even the mechanic who just diagnosed the $1,000 car problem? Guiding our conversation this morning, Dr. Bruce Lease. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Bill.
What a great day it is today.
It is.
Yeah.
That was emotionally intelligent of you to say that.
Dr. Lease is a psychologist in the Department of Family Medicine at KU. Let's start here. Let's keep it simple. Define emotional intelligence for us.
All right. Well, there are lots of types of intelligence. Actually, some people number them 8 or something like that. But to me, the two most important are general intelligence, which we call IQ or book smarts or even street smarts. Actually, that would be more of emotional intelligence. But emotional intelligence is our ability to recognize our own feelings, the feelings of other people, the use of our own feelings to guide our behaviors, empathy, being able to read the cues that another person emits. So emotional intelligence is knowing what you're feeling, knowing what other people are feeling, and putting that into good action.
And where do the 5 senses come into play as it relates to emotional intelligence? Or do I just disregard that?
No, I like that question. Emotional intelligence is the use of more than just the ears. It's the use of the eyes. It's seeing nonverbal cues in another person, maybe even smelling their scent. Somebody who wears a lot of cologne may require a different kind of attention than somebody who doesn't. So all of the senses are probably relevant. I can't think of one that isn't. Just if somebody comes up to you tactile, they put their arm around you and give you a hug, that's a cue that you can read to understand kind of where they're coming from. If you ignore that, you'll be functioning less emotionally intelligently.
Give us a specific example of someone not using their emotional intelligence or lacking emotional intelligence.
I have a really current one. I flew in last night from L.A., and I sat in the aisle seat, and there was a gentleman sitting in the middle seat, and then, of course, somebody over by the window. And the gentleman in the middle was perfectly friendly, and he seemed like a nice enough guy, but he didn't realize, even when our gaze went elsewhere, like to the books we had on our laps, the newspapers, he didn't realize we were finished talking to him. And he kept talking and talking and talking and talking. He clearly didn't take the cues when we were looking down at our stuff, or when the guy on the other side closed his eyes. We're trying to get a nap in. He didn't read any of that. He also, it's interesting, when the flight attendant came over, he said, "I'll take a water." He didn't say, "Can I please have a water?" He didn't say thank you when the water came. Yeah. So being polite is part of emotional intelligence. He also used profanity. He didn't know us from Adam. And he used words that I certainly can't use on this show, just describing what he thought about the state of the world.
Well, so Bruce, as a trained professional and a person who has a high level of emotional intelligence, how do you respond? How do you behave in that situation? Obviously, you didn't
just like
appreciate it.
Well, one of the things I realize is that as part of emotional intelligence is monitoring my own feelings and not letting the small things in life get to me. So I knew that there were strategies that would have to work. For one thing, I knew the guy next to the window probably would be an easier target for the guy. Uh-huh. So I just started going over some of my notes for today's show.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had a similar experience about 2 weeks ago, and this guy was getting into recent surgeries he had. He was sharing all his political beliefs, his love of NPR, which I appreciated. But otherwise, it was like dreadful, and I actually was unable to get some work that I had designated for that time period. I was unable to get that work done. It was real, and I sat there politely and engaged him.
You know, as we talk about this, I can't think of a better microcosm for examining social skills, because anyone who's flown knows that you're really at the mercy of the person sitting next to you. I was thinking of some of the other cues that I noticed on the flight yesterday, and they're really interesting and kind of relevant. He would laugh. He would tell a joke and laugh, and nobody else would laugh with him. He would ask personal questions and get very little in the way of answers, and he just didn't read those cues.
Mm-hmm. So is emotional intelligence, I mean, is it genetic? Is it a learned behavior? Where do I get the tools to appropriately engage with other people?
I'm really relieved to say that it's predominantly learned. I can't say 100%, but I can tell you for sure that it's learned. And the follow-up question, I'm sure, because you're emotionally intelligent, the follow-up question would be, well, how do we learn it?
Mm-hmm.
The first schooling we get for how to deal with our emotions is our own family, how we're treated by our parents, our siblings. That's really important. So,
and I think it even goes back, if I may interrupt, Bruce, back to one's birth. I mean, you take a child that has a lot of face time with his family members or her family members, and you're responding, you're reacting to the cooing and to the facial expressions the baby's making. I'm going to venture a guess that child is probably going to grow up with pretty good emotional intelligence.
Well, I agree with you completely. To illustrate how subtle that education is in our family about emotions, a parent who is woken in the middle of the night by a crying baby who needs to be fed or who's wet their diapers or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If a parent, mother or father, comes into the room and they're frustrated and tired and irritated, and what's going to happen is that the baby is going to monitor that and react to it, and they may stiffen up and not then respond well to mom's or dad's efforts to feed them, and it'll be reciprocal. So the baby will get tense, the parent will be tense, and repeated things like that over and over really teach us humans to relate to feelings either as something that matter or something that doesn't matter. The kid who's crying in the crib and needs to be picked up and fed, who sees a smiling parent, who sees a relaxed parent, it's a whole different experience. So emotional intelligence, the cues are that subtle and that small, and they start at birth. You're right.
But that's not to say that as humans we're not resilient, we're not adaptable, that we cannot, that we do not have the capabilities of changing and learning.
Oh, it's interesting. It's interesting that the more, the expression preaching to the choir, the more emotionally intelligent a person is, the more receptive they'll be to feedback. Those people who don't have that high a level of emotional intelligence misread feedback. They feel like they're criticized, they're attacked. But if a person can break through that shell, that resistance, then people can learn lots of things about mm-hmm. being emotionally intelligent.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM. We're streaming live at kcur.org. I'm Bill Anderson, filling in for Jabalani LaFall this morning. I'm joined today by Dr. Bruce Lease, a psychologist in the Department of Family Medicine at KU. And he's here to tell us about emotional intelligence, being smart with your feelings. And we'd like to hear from you. Kansas City, have you ever encountered a problem because you or someone you care about demonstrated a lack of emotional intelligence? What did you learn from that experience? 235-2888, 816-235-2888. If you'd like to email us, it arrives at centralstandard@kcur.org. And Bruce, this comes in from Susan on our Facebook page. I learned that my daughter does not appreciate it when I make reference to my therapist and or shrink. Smiley face.
I wish Susan were on the phone so I could ask her some questions about the age of her daughter and the extent to which she's seeing somebody for help for a really serious problem. One of the most common mistakes people make that demonstrate a need for more emotional intelligence, one of the mistakes people make in their relationships is they disclose too much, or they're not reading the cues back that they shouldn't be saying these things. You know, it's just people who are not attuned to other people's cues, the people who are not adequately empathetic, don't often know when the messages they're getting are, stop, I don't want to hear that.
Right.
It's hard to know, because we're not talking to Susan, whether or not her daughter's joking or really disturbed by that, et cetera.
Sometimes, you know, talking about, we just referenced Susan's message from Facebook. I'll see what I consider to be way too personal messages from my friends. And even recently, an inadvertently hurtful message that my daughter learned about the death of someone she loved dearly on Facebook, and subsequently went into hysterics. And who wouldn't?
Oh, yeah. I don't think we really knew how much humans lacked emotional intelligence until this huge wave occurred, where you could put anything about yourself out for all to see. It is really apparent from looking at Facebook that our country, our world, could benefit from a better education on what to disclose and what not to disclose.
Well, we've seen people get fired over putting photographs of them in, I don't know, for lack of a better word, compromising positions. Maybe they've had too much tequila and there's all these empty bottles around them, and their employer sees that. I mean, I think that's a perfect example of someone just lacking emotional intelligence. Or maybe just intelligence, period.
Well, every time I think about this image, it makes me smile. I've heard that there are interviewers for jobs, people who do job interviewing, who will, in the middle of an interview, turn to their computer and say, "Hey, do you have a Facebook page? Do you mind if I take a look at it?" No. I learned at a young age, if you don't want to get in trouble for something, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't try to hide it, but just don't do it. Well, if you've done something you shouldn't do, don't put it on Facebook.
Let's go to line one, and calling from Midtown is Arlene. Good morning.
Good morning. I hope you can hear me. My phone doesn't always work right.
Oh, you're coming in great.
Okay, great. When going to school, the teachers didn't have that much to critique me. I guess it was okay as far as the studies went. And my report card inevitably would say, "Arlene must learn to be tactful." So it seems to me that that borders on this lack of emotional intelligence. How do you learn to be tactful? What should they have taught me?
It's interesting, because I don't know how old you are.
I'm going to be 3/4 of a century in November.
Oh, wonderful.
Isn't that wonderful?
It is wonderful. And you sound as youthful as can be.
Well, thank you. You are very emotionally intelligent.
Thanks.
He's something else too, Arlene, but we'll save that for later.
Okay.
Yeah. No, Arlene, you know, times really have changed. And what was permissible, what was not permissible, however many years ago you were in school, let's count them, 60 plus.
In the 40s,
yeah.
And I graduated in 54.
Social norms have changed dramatically. I will tell the truth here and say that I got the same kinds of report cards as you, Arlene.
Oh, wonderful.
And being assertive and direct was not exactly encouraged at certain times in the educational system of our country. And I'm not ready to conclude that you really had a problem when they said use more tact. You sound very tactful to me, and I mean it.
Well, you come to our neighborhood meetings. I tell things the way they are, and some people don't like it, but somebody has to say it.
So, Bruce, she's direct.
I love it. Yeah. I haven't heard a problem yet from all the things you've said.
It's kind of warned me not to bring up the thing about autism, but it kind of feels to me like I don't tap into what other people are feeling. I even have trouble with my own feelings. My husband was so good in that domain. He died of cancer 7 years ago, and I miss him still. But I'm much more on the analytical level, and I objectify things better. And so I don't understand people who get ballistic over some little non-essential.
What kind of friendship network do you have? Do you have some really good friends that love you?
I have people that I phone every day. I've been phoning my sister. I was just up in Canada helping her out after a couple of baby strokes. So I have a telephone network. I have my neighborhood, and I have my church, a few people in my church, but they're all great people.
Do they respond well to you?
I would say so. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have really good dialogue, and I try to benefit from what they're saying because they say it as friends. And they can tell me whatever they want.
Arlene, are you a good listener?
I try to be. I try to really hear what the message is. I've taught English as a second language, and I try and go through the words into what the person is saying rather than the syntax or whatever.
Well, so far, what I glean from what you've said is that it doesn't sound like it's a problem, but as much a resource that you're using pretty well. Now, if all of your neighbors call up after you hang up and if they all call and chime in and say, no, you didn't get Arlene right, we'll revisit this.
Thanks. I'd be glad if that happened. It means KCUR has more listeners.
Happy three quarters of a century.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you for taking the call. Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
Bye.
And Steve is joining us from Bonner Springs. Hi, Steve.
How are you? Hi, Arlene sounds like my kind of gal.
Well, wait, let me just say something about what you just said. You use the term gal, and in some circles, that's considered derogatory. Now, I would say that you can't assume it's derogatory, but the term gal to people who feel more comfortable with the phrase woman, in some circles, somebody might feel somewhat slighted, insulted, or make assumptions about you that that you wouldn't want them to have. It's sufficiently broadly used in our culture that term I wouldn't assume for sure was problematic, but that term used for a 75-year-old person might get you into trouble with certain...
You'd be careful if you were sitting in the middle seat on the plane, for sure.
Yeah, or if you were with a group of professional women who felt like it was demeaning. So,
well, and perhaps I called a little bit too early in the discussion to hear this, but it seemed like you maybe concentrated on the environment with the parents, and I wonder, is it fair to blame environment and education and parenting? Are we born with a certain amount of EQ or a lack of a certain amount of EQ? Is that inherent like it is with IQ?
I love that question.
You know, so much of who we are really is genetic and biological. And I say so much because it just has to be the case. Nobody's been able to really quantify it. It's hard enough to quantify emotional intelligence because if you ask somebody directly, they'll say they are. But you use the word blame. Is it legitimate to blame? I like to think of – I like to keep an open mind, and I like to assume that I just don't know, and I like to keep trying to figure things like that out, how much of a person's social skillfulness is part of genetics and how much was taught by their parents and how much can we modify it. So I have an open mind to all of those questions, and I can say confidently that I don't have any definitive answer. Have I answered your question?
Well, of course. Oh, of course. As much as it can be answered. But, yeah, that was my, you know, not to really blame, but, again, like Arlene had mentioned, autism, you know, the early studies in that field were that it was a lack of bonding on the parent. And I, as someone who is, I've self-described as less emotionally intelligent, and my sister, who is very emotionally intelligent, we've been that way just as long as I can remember. And, man, if I need to pick up on some cues, all I have to do is take a glance at her, and I'm pretty much aware of what's going on.
You know, it's interesting. An emotionally intelligent person will also be humble. They'll have humility. And so if a person says, I'm not very emotionally intelligent, just the humility to admit that makes me think they are probably more emotionally intelligent than they admit.
How do we answer that?
I don't know. You know, it's interesting. You are obviously a man, a male, and I mentioned the thing about gals. I'll tell you a quick and I think a funny story. I was sitting in my office at the medical center, KU Med, and I had three women graduate students working with me that day, and one of them used the term gal, and I gave her the same hard time I just gave you. And all of them looked at me like, what are you, crazy? What's wrong with gal? So we searched it on the internet, the phrase gal. And if you look at definitions for gal, they really are somewhat outdated when we use that term. And it was used long, long time ago to talk about particular kinds of women. So if you have time on your hands, look up, search for the word gal and see what you
can. I will. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Steve, that's why I'm very scripted today, by the way.
Thanks. So he doesn't say the wrong thing, the emotionally.
I did my best.
Thanks for the phone call.
Thank you.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM. Psychologist Dr. Bruce Leese of the Department of Family Medicine at KU is in the studio with us taking your phone calls. Have you ever encountered a problem because you or someone you care about demonstrated a lack of emotional intelligence? 235-2888, 816-235-2888. Bruce, do you recognize that there are differences as it applies to emotional intelligence with boys and girls, men and women?
It's dangerous to generalize, but research on differences between men and women in the psychology world, differences tend to be very, very small when you look at the research. Women, girls when they're young, are taught to pay attention to their feelings, their emotions, more than boys are, and that certainly comes out in the research. Bill, I want to say one more thing to maybe expand this concept of emotional intelligence beyond relationships. Emotional intelligence is also really, really important outside of the context of relationships. There are people who get into careers that are really unsatisfying to them, and they may include lots of people around them or no people around them. But to the extent that you can read, monitor, and identify your own feelings, you will decide, am I in the right career or not? If I am an engineer, a computer scientist, or even just a bench scientist, and I feel good every time I go to work, then I'm probably in the right career. And it's emotional. And I may not be gregarious or extroverted or friendly to all the people around me. That doesn't mean I'm not emotionally intelligent. It may manifest itself, my emotional intelligence, just by having chosen a career that's me and enjoying it. So don't confuse outgoingness with emotional intelligence. If you're doing what you love and you can feel it, you're emotionally intelligent. And if you're not doing something you love and you don't feel it, or you feel it and you don't respond. So it's not always people-oriented.
Jonathan sent us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Dr. Leese, here's what he had to say. I think emotional intelligence should be a required course within school curriculum. And I think training on, and this is in quotes, being an adult is important and should not be assumed as a home-learned activity.
That's Jonathan?
Yes.
Oh, terrific. Thank you for that, Jonathan. I was in graduate school during the time when the course known as deliberate psychological education was introduced. There was actually an entire program revolving around that. So that's a really good idea.
This is Central Standard. You're on KCUR 89.3 FM, streaming live at kcur.org. I'm Bill Anderson, filling in for Jabalani LaFall, and we're speaking today with Dr. Bruce Leese. He teaches family medicine at KU. We're going to take a break, but when we get back, more about what adults can do to boost their emotional intelligence. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Bill Anderson, filling in for Jabalani LaFall. In the era of Facebook and Twitter, one too much information moment, TMI, could have lasting consequences. And I'm speaking today with Dr. Bruce Leese, a psychologist in the Department of Family Medicine at KU, about a kind of smarts that really has nothing to do with your IQ, but everything to do with your success, and that's emotional intelligence. And so many things can go wrong in the workplace. So,
oh, yeah.
And we don't really come well prepared to interact on a high level and in an emotional level with people in the workplace. You just kind of have to learn by experience.
Well, one of the things that is difficult about emotional intelligence is that a lot of the manifestations of it, a lot of the real world stuff that happens around emotional intelligence is almost invisible. It's so subtle. And I noticed, Bill, that you use the term of endearment buddy for people.
Yes, I do overuse that.
I don't know
where you're going with this.
But
I'm very aware of that. It's hard to discipline myself not to use that.
There was actually a college professor that did something like that, and he was so emotionally intelligent and open to change that in a lecture room of 300 people, he invited all the students to raise their hands. Just hold your hand up high when I use that phrase, whatever the phrase was for him.
Well, let's say it's buddy.
Buddy. So yeah. Every time he said buddy, he saw 300 hands go up.
Yeah.
He says that it cured him quickly. So if you get all your buddies to tell you when you're doing it, it might help.
I've used that with you before. And I think at first you were flattered, but then you realized that it was an expression I overused. And how did you feel about that?
Oh, I cried for days.
Yeah, sure you did. You lost a lot of sleep. Yeah.
What happens with nicknames is that everyone takes them differently. So to use nicknames, one must have a very high level of emotional intelligence to use them over and over again. Any phrase that's used in everyday conversation over and over and over again is going to be overused.
And I think Corey in Lawrence has the question I want to ask next. Go ahead, Corey. You're on the air.
Hi. Nice to engage in this conversation. I appreciate it. I just wanted to point out that I've been on several flights across the ocean, and never once sat next to somebody that I felt had control over me or that I was, going to have to deal with throughout that flight. I've also never sat in front of a person and just sat there and listened, with whatever they say going in one of my ears and out the other. I don't consider that necessarily, emotional intelligence that I'm exhibiting there in those instances. Like I say, I've never really done that, but that I wouldn't consider it emotionally intelligent for a person to do that. And you guys seem to be confusing what you're calling emotional intelligence with complacency or or conformity or, you know, just sort of a lack of emotion or a lack of instinct, not wanting to rock the boat, not wanting to offend anyone. I think there are many occasions when emotional intelligence means speaking your mind and telling the truth, being honest with people, listening to them intently, and respecting the people that you're sitting beside.
Dr.
You'd be
Lees?
Amazed to find out that that kind of respect goes an awful long way.
Dr.
And
Lees.
Those people sitting next to you are not necessarily causing you as much trouble in those, you know, when you're respectful of them.
Good comment, Dr. Lees.
Without naming the airline, I have a million miles on one of the airlines, and I can say that I've had every kind of sitting next to someone experience that one can imagine, from just being downright embarrassed for them to both of us telling each other our life stories and really feeling like we should pay for therapy at the end of the conversation. So I've sat next to people who didn't – and by the way, Corey, I agree with your description, definition of emotional intelligence. Thank you. Empathy,
respect.
And I'm really
not talking about their particular emotional intelligence, but yours.
Right.
We're sitting there. And, I mean, not engaging and not maybe doing what your part might be at that particular instance in making them more intelligent, so to speak. That is, to making them more emotionally intelligent, you can engage with them and change what you otherwise will view as emotional unintelligence.
That's a really valuable endeavor. I think that when you care about people, it's the way to show them you care.
Oftentimes, emotional unintelligence is misdiagnosed simply because you're not engaging with them.
Yeah.
You're an onlooker.
Right. And I agree with I agree with that.
Corey, thanks for your phone call this morning. Let's go to line four and David. David's also calling from Lawrence.
Yes, how are you guys doing?
We're doing quite well this morning.
And if we told you every ache and pain we had, we would be demonstrating a lack of emotional intelligence.
There you go. Well, I have actually two questions. I'm an alcoholic in recovery, and when I'm sitting in meetings, in a roundabout way, EQ is often brought up. We talk about it quite a bit. So I was wondering, what we say is when an alcoholic starts drinking alcoholically that they stop growing emotionally, and that when they recover, they're kind of at that emotional level that they were when they started drinking alcoholically. And so I was kind of wondering if there's, if you've maybe seen any of that. And also the EQ that, I mean, I know that I face in my life and I see it in other alcoholics, is just kind of the frustration of, as we say it, not getting what we want when we want it, and how we deal with that frustration, whether we, you know, stuff it and it kind of turns into a resentment or a rage, or if we just kind of let it out in inappropriate manners. And I guess was wondering about that, if that's, you know, particular for, you know, maybe people like us, or if that's more of a kind of a normal issue.
Oh, I really appreciate both questions. I'm going to answer them until Bill does the finger across the throat thing and says, stop talking. This is David, thank you for your call. Congratulations on your
Thanks.
Abstinence. Absolutely. I've spent much of my career researching and writing about substance use problems and other addictive behaviors. And I have said just what you said hundreds of times to people who are in recovery. I've said, by using substances like alcohol and other drugs, by using those early in life, particularly pre-adolescence, adolescence, and during that whole time, you do retard your emotional development, because the compensatory strategy, the compensation for not having good skills of mind-altering substances, it doesn't give people the opportunity to learn so much. So I can't endorse that concept enough. It's very, very important. And you brought up frustration. That's how that development is retarded. Frustration is an inevitable and normal part of all human existence. And to the extent that we can tolerate frustration to an appropriate level, tolerating too much frustration isn't healthy. In other words, being in an abusive relationship, which mm-hmm. would be frustrating, that's too much. But tolerating frustration or the converse, low frustration tolerance would be very common in somebody who's used too many compensating or compensatory strategies. So anyone who's trying to overcome an addictive behavior needs to pay attention to their emotional intelligence and their ability to handle frustration.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR and KCUR.org. Jabalani LaFall returns tomorrow. I'm Bill Anderson, substituting today with Dr. Bruce Lease. He's at the at the University of KU Medical Center, where he teaches. 235-2888. If you'd like to email the show, centralstandard@kcur.org. Tricia writes, Dr. Lease, sometimes I feel like I do lack emotional intelligence. Now, this is a tough one. I lack that emotional intelligence when I'm speaking in English, but when I'm speaking in my native tongue, I'm fairly good. Any suggestion for people like me who speak English as a second language?
I was a visiting.
Do we need to take another break here?
I was actually a visiting. I was a visiting scholar in Taiwan at one point in time, and I was there to teach and to teach both by lecturing, psychology, counseling, all that stuff, the touchy-feely stuff, and I absolutely positively knew that I had lost a lot of my potency as somebody that helped others deal with their feelings. I mean, Tricia, you're exactly right. I remember needing to have the Taiwanese people I was working with explain concepts to me that I totally understood in English, and I just didn't when they had to be explained to me when they were Taiwanese words. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's a great point.
So I mean, where does she go to, you know, learn the English equivalent of?
Close friendships with people who really care about her, who are fluent, bilingual people would be ideal.
Mm-hmm.
So technology
certainly works against us. We go out to dinner and there sits our iPad or our smartphone. We're taking phone calls while we're sitting down to enjoy a relaxing dinner. And we're all guilty of this. But that so works against, you know, having really healthy relationships and what I like to call living in the moment.
You provide me with an opportunity to talk about character. A person's character includes how emotionally intelligent they are. If a person's character is to be sensitive to other people's feelings and to be sensitive to one's or aware of one's own feelings, that ability, long-standing, that trumps circumstances. Somebody on their cell phone in a restaurant isn't necessarily somebody who's not emotionally intelligent. Some people are emotionally intelligent, and they use technology well. My wife is a good case in point when it comes to me on the phone in a restaurant or wherever. Mm-hmm. She says, take care of this now so that we can, you know, we don't have to think about it later. Why don't you just answer that call quickly? I don't mind. Mm-hmm. The most important thing is, what kind of character do you have? Do you really pay attention to other people's feelings, or are you somebody who chronically doesn't? And if you're somebody who chronically doesn't, you're probably going to be texting and talking too loud in restaurants and answering your phone at the movie theater and on and on.
And yeah, on and on and on. From Prairie Village, Cynthia is joining us on the airwaves.
Yes, hi. I have spent the past 20 years managing investments and retirement plans, and I've always had this position, which might be wrong, that silence is not an answer when dealing with clients. And I'm curious, is my position inaccurate? I've always felt that when you're engaged in a two-way conversation, if there's an opportunity to move forward or not move forward, one should discuss the answer. And I'm curious, what are your thoughts about that?
You said you are a retirement fund manager, or that you...
I manage retirement plans. Investments.
Mm-hmm. Your career, by your choice, is one where you are held very, very, very accountable for what you do. And so I'm guessing you're a very you're a very focused person, and you like to get things done. You like to you're an action-oriented person. Is that correct?
That's probably an understatement, but yes.
There you
correct.
Go. Thank you. Well, I wanted to be careful. I wanted to be emotionally intelligent about how I framed it. Yeah. So if you're an action, you're a fix-it kind of person, and you've chosen a career that's probably great for you. That style works under some circumstances, but not all circumstances. So if you are silent when you think you have something to say, you might find out that what the person says in that silence or following that silence, what the person says is far more profound than anything you could have said to them. So if you swing one way or another, being an extrovert myself, I had to do the same thing. I had to learn to be silent so that I could hear more than I was hearing if I needed to fill the silences with talking.
But I'm also another subject matter of when the client chooses silence as an answer or not. I mean, when I made a presentation, so what would you like to do next? I said, well, we will get back with you. And then there's no response, and you follow up, no response. And if you don't follow up, you learn later they've gone in a different direction. Mm-hmm. So I guess my question is silence an answer?
Again, it's so contextually dependent. It depends on the context. Let me ask you a question. Cynthia, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Let's say that you have a good friend who's just suffered the loss of a loved one. Is there a difference in how much silence you think is appropriate there versus talking to a client?
I'm sorry, I'm not quite grasping your point.
In the context of work and being an advisor, you are an advisor. I would want you to talk and advise. But in a completely different context, let's say you have a friend who suffered the loss of something big, a job, a family member. I would expect that you would realize that in that context, it's no longer necessary to be Cynthia the advisor. It's time for to be Cynthia the listener who can tolerate silences and.
Well, I understand. You're saying my silence is going to be regarded as supportive for that person.
Oh, it'll also – people, when they suffer, often need to sort out what they're feeling themselves. And being present with somebody as a compassionate presence, being present with somebody who is suffering, enables them to sort things out. So if I'm in front of a lecture hall, I'm certainly not going to think silence is optimal. But if I'm I spent the weekend with my daughter. Silence was really great. It was really nice to just listen to her kind of process where she is in her life, in her career at 24 years old. It was awesome to be quiet more than I would be doing what I'm doing right now. Bill would be really upset if I practiced silence now, wouldn't you, Bill?
Most likely. This is Central Standard on KCUR. We're streaming live at kcur.org. Filling in for Jabalani LaFall, I'm Bill Anderson. Speaking today with Dr. Bruce Leese, a psychologist in the Department of Family Medicine at KU, and he's here to talk about emotional intelligence. Bruce, do you have any advice for Congress and the White House, or both sides of the aisle in Congress? No less than former Senator Bob Dole was on NPR this morning talking about how he can't believe the name-calling that's taking place and that they need to find ways to communicate. And that plays right into our conversation this morning.
I am completely baffled by the way our leaders are behaving these days. I am baffled by it. The potential for harm done to all of us by the gamesmanship and all that stuff, it's just breathtaking and not in a good way. I can't imagine that this is a group of people who's emotionally unintelligent. I don't think they'd be elected to office. But for some reason, they're not hearing us say, with an 85% disapproval rate, they're not hearing us say, hey, get it together, pay attention to what we're feeling and thinking and what we need. And so I am not somebody to get on a discussion about politics because I'll probably get in trouble.
Well, let's bring Chris into this conversation. Chris is calling from Kansas City.
Well, that's exactly the topic I was going to ask a question on. I have been a fan of Daniel Goleman's work on emotional intelligence for the last couple of decades.
He is the father. He's not old enough to be a grandfather, I don't think, but he did the best work, the initial work. He did the book Emotional Intelligence, and then the book.
And that wasn't, what, mid-'80s?
It was relatively later. I think it was 95.
Okay.
It might be 95.
So it's a relatively new science.
I have a follow-up book sitting right here.
About work.
Working with Emotional Intelligence in 1998. Yeah.
Terrific book. I recommend it to anyone who is a manager, actually.
Well, this is a huge issue for our society. We claim to be family-oriented, but we don't actually teach people how to relate, children how to relate in schools, for example, if they're not getting at home. And if you read Goleman, he'll tell you very clearly that emotional intelligence is the single most important factor in terms of being successful in life, much more than simple IQ. The question I have for you, I have always taken the position and never found it to be not true, is that you can tell the true nature of someone's character in two circumstances, one where they have power, or two, when they're down on their luck.
Mm-hmm.
So either when they have power over other people or when they're struggling. And in both of those cases, you'll see their true baseline nature come out. And what I'm seeing in this country right now is the emotional intelligence, at least from my perspective, seems to be decreasing dramatically. We're becoming more and more predatory upon each other from the top down, all over, universally in this country, instead of cooperation occurring at the base and working all the way to the top of our leaders.
Yeah,
what you thought about that?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts about it. Let me start with politics and put my toes in the water at least.
Be very, very careful. No, I say that in jest.
I know to avoid anything partisan, and I will do that. I would say that what happens when a politician, influences people to think in ways that are destructive. It is, of course, selfish, self-serving, but I think that politician is taking advantage of the lack of emotional intelligence of their constituency. So whether I'm Democrat, Republican, Independent, or whatever, or I still wish Ross Perot were president, I didn't mean I do. But if I was that party, I would it doesn't matter what party you are, but there are politicians that take advantage of people's pain, suffering, and tell them things that just aren't true and how they're going to solve their problems. So let's put politics aside. You made some terrific points, but since you have Daniel Goleman's book in hand, read the whole thing, loved it, had a lot of great research, recommend it to everyone. But when I closed the book, I thought, you know, there's more that I want to say about emotional intelligence and what's in there. So here's what I got to thinking. I work in two or three work environments where there are lots of people who have to work with each other. And being very practical, the employee who complains too much about other employees is showing an absence of emotional intelligence. The employee who gossips, the employee who discloses too much about their pain, their suffering, their sadness, their loneliness, that person who discloses too much is demonstrating a lack of emotional intelligence. I can't believe there are employees who say to their colleagues that they've or their peers that they've gotten away with doing something wrong at work. So I could go on and on. I don't think Bill will let me because I think we'll probably run out of time. Do I have time for a couple more?
Yeah, a couple more, and then I have a question that comes from Joyce.
Okay, great. So, you know, the employee that doesn't offer to help other employees when they clearly see that the other employee is struggling or needs a hand, and the employee who's known as a slacker, the one that doesn't work as hard as everyone else. These are all samples of emotional intelligence. I once had a boss who would become extremely emotional in meetings, and nobody thinks that's healthy, and nobody maintains respect for people when they show anger in the workplace. I have a hands-on experience where I recently saw a manager complain to an employee about another employee. And those are the kinds of things that happen when people don't use their best emotional intelligence.
You touched on something when you were talking to Chris a moment ago, and this comes from Joyce. How do you deal, and we're going to need the quick answer, how do you deal with someone who's a manipulator, who misuses emotional intelligence?
Well, it depends on your position with them. If you're a manager, it is your job to go directly to them and say, we can't have this in the workplace. If you're a coworker, you might say something tactful and just demonstrate that you're not interested.
And the same would apply if you're a family member.
Yes.
We have time for one more phone call. It has to be quick, Bob. I'm sorry.
Oh, no problem. No problem. Actually, my question was, is emotional intelligence something that you can learn? And then also a second quick question regard to the financial advisor who called in. Is emotional intelligence something that perhaps leads people to choose or pick a particular career, if you will?
Yeah.
So two questions, I'm sorry.
People who really are thirsty for learning about emotions and dealing with emotions and talking about emotions would choose probably one of the careers like teaching or medicine. They'd pick a career that involves taking care of other people's emotions. And the first question you asked about whether it's learnable, read the book by John Gottman, How to Raise an Emotionally Intelligent Child. Very, very, very well-respected researcher and psychologist. Gottman, How to Raise an Emotionally Intelligent Child. Yes, you can learn it at any age.
I got this out of a early childhood development textbook. It's not necessary to love all children, but it is necessary to communicate genuine respect and caring.
I like that.
Will that work?
That's great.
Dr. Bruce Leese, thanks. We'll see you again probably a month or so from now.
I always look forward to this. Thank you very much.
Nice to have you here. Thanks for your phone calls, emails, and comments of all sorts. We didn't get to them all, but we made our best attempt, and we thank you for listening to Central Standard on KCUR. Tune in tomorrow for a look at why the Tulips on Troost initiative has very little to do with tulips, much more to do with personal stewardship and ownership of Troost Avenue. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi with help from Tamika Weatherspoon. Up to Date is next with the Wall Street Journal critic Terry Teachout. They'll be talking about the future of American stage. I'm Bill Anderson in for Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Have a great day.